Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
And this episode of Where Did the Road Go is part 11 of UFO history. And I am here with Aaron Gullius and Mike Cleland. How you doing, guys?
Good.
Very well.
And the last time I had you on, we talked about the Roswell slides and we talked about the disclosure hearings. And I feel like one of the things I kind of took from that is like the disclosure hearings, if nothing else, might have given the more common people out there who are not following this stuff a better view of the UFO phenomenon. Might have gotten them to take it a little more seriously, you know? And then comes the Roswell slides 2 years later, and they went, oh, this.
Yep.
So it kind of undid any good publicity that the disclosure hearings might have actually, you know, engineered out there.
Yeah, I think things like the Roswell slides, like the alien autopsy film before them, it isn't just that they you know do more harm than good. I think they actively undo good that's been done in the past. Yeah, yeah,
it's, and therein lies the you know the assumption that there could be some sort of conspiratorial aspect where these things were staged specifically to undo the good research that had been, you know, laid down before them, or the good,
true,
or the good publicity stunts that had been laid down before them. Yeah. So, you know, whether, you know, the my sense is the alien autopsy thing, you know, if that was a kind of a, like if that was a gag, if that was a hoax, that was kind of a elaborate, expensive hoax. You know, that wasn't, you know, the finding the film from the 1940s and stuff. That's, to me, though I have no proof, just my sense is that there's, you know, there was a reason that happened and someone with the money and the wherewithal to do it, you know, managed to pull that off in a way that could easily be debunked.
Yes.
And again, we're back to the thing where it did not look like anything that alien lying on the table did not look like anything that gets reported by you know, the people who have the direct contact experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we're up to the last couple of years now. There's been a few interesting things that have happened in the last few years. In 2016, Tom DeLonge came out again in a disclosure type of thing, saying he had information he was picked to disclose to the general public. If people don't know who he is, he was the frontman of Blink 182 for a very long time, and he has a new band, I think, called Angels and Airwaves or something like that. I forget exactly what
it's
it is.
Something like that, yeah.
Which is all songs about this type of stuff. And he's also
that's gotta get old.
He has a book out called Secret Machines as well, with AJ Hartley talking about this stuff. And my feeling, if I'm understanding it right, is the book is fictional.
The book is fictional, and I have the book. I've attempted to read parts of it, and you know, I'm talking having not read the book, but the first thing I did actually when I got the book is I got it on Kindle, right? And you can, as I searched out owls, I was curious if owls showed up, and they do actually show up twice in the book, and they have nothing at all to do. It was just like a little set piece, you know, like, someone mentioned, you know, like they were driving at night and there was an owl, you know, but, and it didn't have any, there was nothing that happened after that, but it's a lot of so the book is fictional. The second book came out. Oh God, I should know what the second book is called now. And that was written by Peter Lavenda. So there's a very strange set of like promotional pictures where it's Tom DeLonge and John. But is it, which is Podesta? Is he the fellow? Yes, the guy pushing for disclosure in the Hillary Clinton campaign, right?
Right, right.
And so it's John Podesta, Tom DeLonge, and Peter Lavenda, all in this kind of official looking kind of, you know, blue blood Washington, D.C. Like lobby. And, you know, Peter Lavenda has got some of the most dark, bleak outlooks on the human or the American psyche. His
that's dark stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, he's it's just one step away from drinking baby's blood kind of stuff. But so there, there's the kind of grade B, pop star. And a guy who's written about, the occult underpinnings of the national security state. And there's, someone who worked in the Clinton White House and was leading, was playing an active role in Hillary's campaign, all sort of, smiling at the camera, like here, we're going to work on this big project all together. It just struck me as so weird.
Yeah, and there's some elements to it just from interviews. I haven't read the book. I looked at the number of pages and kept scrolling to a different book.
Over 700.
Yeah, nobody's got time for that.
But was that part of the plan? There's got to be someone you don't have to be in the publishing business for 50 years to kind of say you want to write The Da Vinci Code. I mean, that couldn't have been. That must have been under 300 right. pages. You're gonna write a zippy, fast-paced, adventure yep. book.
Publishers, they
love about 240 pages. Yep,
they've done lots of research about how much books cost to produce and how and who buys what length of books and books that are too long. But this is one of those topics where you've got an inbuilt audience. But from what I've seen and read in interviews I've heard. There's also an undercurrent, in addition to all those very odd and slightly sinister things Mike mentioned, there's also this undercurrent of the government who's been keeping these secrets are actually the good guys, and we should be very grateful that they've done the work they've done. And so there's some cheerleading for the military industrial intelligence establishment that strikes some people as being a little, come on, pal, you don't know you're being played. And that's, that's one of the things is that I heard an interview with Greg Bishop. Was it on your show, Soraya?
Yeah, we talked about it on the show, yeah.
Yeah, he's probably, as far as that genre of things, the sort of, I'm being leaked secret information and now I'm going to share it with the world. He's got a lot of background in that. And
yes.
And it just everybody go read Project Beta. That's, I always plug Greg's books instead of my own because they're bad. But, it's very much in that vein of, I'm being leaked secret information, but it's not disinformation. Well, how do you know? Because they told me it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Richard Doty stuff.
This very naive. There's just a lot of good guys in the government who are trying to get the word out to the people. Sort of things like, well, honestly, if you're really a good guy in the intelligence business, you're probably trying like hell not to let stuff get out. But it's anything in an ideal intelligence world, anything they tell you is what they want you to think and what they want you to know, not necessarily the truth. And they've got agendas, and I think it's fascinating. I kind of want to read this Secret Machines book, God's Man and War, I think is the first one. And there's Chasing Shadows or Other Way Around.
Yeah, Chasing Shadows is the first one.
Yeah, there's like, Secret Machines Book 1, Chasing Shadows, and then Secret Machines, Gods, and an Official Investigation of the UFO Phenomenon. And I'm not sure
what... And that's Peter Lavenda's book, yeah.
Yeah, that's the DeLong and Lavenda with the Jacques Vallée foreword. And that one's only 454 pages. So, good Lord. That's
and Jacques Vallée doing a foreword to it seems odd to me.
And I think my sense is just, this is... hearsay after hearsay after hearsay that Jacques Vallée has somewhat distanced himself from the project. Though that's hearsay. Hey, there's a series, I think it's a 3-part series on Mysterious Universe, that podcast series out of Australia. And they have a website that hosts.
Oh, yeah.
Robbie Graham.
Yep, yeah. Robbie Graham did a three-part called The DeLong Delusion.
Yeah.
That is required reading.
The third part's out. I only read the first two.
I read the first two also, yeah.
Okay. I need to find that third part. Yeah. Speaking of which, I just got Robbie Graham's Silver Screen Saucers book. And I'm
right on. What did you think?
I haven't read it yet. I just got it. And I just started.
It's less than 700 pages.
It is. It is far less. It's outstanding. And I also, as an aside, just picked up Joshua Cutchin's Brimstone Deceit too. Mm. So I've got some good stuff on the reading pile.
But anyway, he actually in the article sums up the claims made by DeLong, which is that the UFO phenomenon is real, exotic technologies are involved. While non-human intelligences play a part in the long history of UFOs, the modern phenomena is more the result of top-secret human research and development programs. And finally, these technologies have been concealed from the public for legitimate national security reasons. Multiple nations have been long engaged in a secret Cold War struggle for access to and control of UFO technologies. Naturally, all this has far-reaching implications for global security.
Yeah, it kind of makes me well up and proud to be an American hearing something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
So that's the myth. Yep. That's the myth that's being perpetrated in that's the myth that was in like in the what do you call it, the Transformers movies. You know, that was pretty much word for word. That's kind of the in Transformer movies. That was ancient aliens. You know, that actually could turn into giant cars and robots and
as a real Transformers fan from back in the day and still those movies irk me, but yeah, that was a consistent theme that it was being covered up for our own good. You know, the government is doing what it needs to do to protect us, and that sort of thread in DeLong's sort of stuff that's the dangerous part.
And that's what Robbie Graham covers so beautifully in Silver Screen Saucers.
Yep.
Just that mythology, that aspect of it. You know, so here's the, so the thing is, right? So, I mean, this is a line straight out of the X-Files, you know, in Mulder's contact at one point, this is early on in the series, you know, he's in the dark warehouse and he meets his contact and the fellow says, the best place to hide the truth is between two lies. And so that, you know, so I'm like, well, if he is being fed all this stuff and, you know, like something's true, you know, like what's the true part, you know, is it the, so there's, you know, there's that kind of, I am intrigued just to play, you know, to solve the puzzle, to, you know, try to work on the crossword puzzle of you know what's real, you know what was given to Tom DeLong, and this writer that he worked with, and to create this fictional story, and you know what's real, what's not, and what was he told was real and is actually not, just to throw researchers out down blind alleys.
Hmm. You got to feel a little bad for Tom DeLong. I'm sure he believes what he's being told. I'm sure they went a far way to convincing him that what he was being told was the absolute truth. But, I mean, what's this going to do to his life?
Yeah. These situations don't usually go well, do they?
No.
It's you're being used and you will be used up. And when they are gone and they have no more reason to tell you stories, you are still going to be there and you are not going to know probably exactly what happened. And there's two possibilities, really. Either you realize that you've been had and you're living with that, or you think it's all true and you don't know why they don't talk to you, and you don't know what you did to make them stop giving you the information. So this is damaging to the so-called recipients of the so-called information. And because I don't know how it couldn't be. You invest a great deal of your life and your identity in this, and you sort of look at the Benowitz situation, and from what I've read and from what I understand, he had some problems before all of this started. It isn't like the contact with AFOSI, you know, took a completely normal person and drove them mad. But it sure didn't help. and with DeLong's level of celebrity and the way he's really putting himself out there, this is, you know, you got to get off the merry-go-round at some point, and then you're really dizzy and you fall over, right?
Yeah, and so, then there's also plans for movies and comic books and you know, websites and podcasts, and I mean, it's a big you know, like he's
gonna make money off of it.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, I have a slight insight into what kind of money gets made off of a book, he might not make that much money off of it, you know. So unless there's I've been watching the you know, how things are selling on Amazon and stuff like that, and yes, it is selling, but you know, he's not John Grisham.
No.
Well, sure. But if he's also putting out movie rights, and it's probably bringing more attention to his new band.
Yeah. Yeah, the money's in selling the movie options while it's hot.
Yeah.
And then the movies never get made because everything cools off. But yeah, he's the money is probably not being made on the books. The money is being made on all the ancillary spin-off media that's going to come from, or the money's being made on, like, the film selling the rights to companies to produce things based on this, where he gets the money and they're stuck with the job of you know, developing the property. That's the side of things to be on, is people giving you money for ideas that then they have to do something with.
And his website is, you can get Secret Machine hats and t-shirts at his website.
Oh, for God's sake.
And what strikes me about this too is that it's very much fitting with a lot of the modern fiction on the whole UFO thing, putting the government more into it than, say, back in the 70s or 80s.
Oh yeah,
it's more X-Files-ish, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah, it's building on this mythology of this late 80s and early mid 90s mythology of there has been a cover up since the very beginning, and where everything is sort of not known, but everything is knowable. We can find out if we get the right information, if we get the right whistleblower, if we get the right witness, we can put all of this together in a neat narrative showing that this is when Eisenhower met with the aliens at Edwards Air Force Base, and this is when the aliens had JFK killed or whatever. And which is completely unlike the narratives that were actually going during the time, which is, we all think there's something going on and the government hasn't got a clue, and so they're pretending like there isn't anything going on so they don't have to admit they don't know what's going on, which is more realistic, but doesn't sell books. Or it's a terrible TV show of another week where we don't know what's going on, you know, after reading a bunch of reports. Actually, I'd watch that show. I would watch a show of a bunch of frustrated Air Force guys who are just like, what the hell? It's like another person with the cigar-shaped glowing thing, you know? Actually, the Jack Webb UFO TV show or whatever was kind of like that. Well, another story where we've solved this Project Blue Book case by saying it was unknown but probably not strange. You know, some very crew cut Jack Webb style guys.
Yeah. So
that was a fun show.
Now, one of the other things that's risen in talk about UFOs and stuff come from the and again, to me, this feels like it built off the X-Files to some degree, is the whole military abduction thing, where the military is abducting people and making them think they had alien abductions. And I don't know exactly where that idea started, but I'm pretty sure it started post X-Files.
Oh no, it was around before that.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I think so. And I mean, there was a great X-Files episode where they even, what was it? Where the one with, Jose Chung.
Where it ends from outer space.
Yeah. And you know, where it ends, where the person who had the military abduction actually becomes a cult leader, which I thought was, you know, a wonderful little twist. You know, I've talked to people who tell of these direct experiences, and they seem credible to me. They're sharing their memories. I've heard some, you know, very you know, there's a report of a, and this is just, I would have a hard time citing this. Someone had a classic UFO type experience, abduction experience. And then the next morning they got up and there was like a medical box, you know, like something like an ambulance driver would carry, you know, just like it had some medical equipment, you know, in their living room, just sitting there open as if, you know, someone had filled the syringe there in the living room and actually created, you know, rendered someone unconscious or susceptible to hypnosis.
And then forgot about their stuff.
And then in the dark and, you know, in the tiptoeing around, yeah, forgot about that one little box. So I've talked to people who have there are credible people telling incredible stories. And it gets very murky, you know, it gets very, very murky. My sense is that there, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's a chance that these are exactly what people are saying. But what I feel I've, the conclusion that seems more easy for me is that it's a combination of several things. I mean, you know, it's often just it's men in a uniform. You know, it's not an Air Force uniform. It's not a uniform with a rank or insignia on it. It's just men in uniforms. That's what people are reporting. And I mean, could that be just as much a screen memory as someone seeing a giant deer or a giant owl? You know, is it true abduction? So these things certainly get reported. And I will tell you, the people who tell these accounts are pretty anxious folks. I mean, they seem traumatized, you know. So if someone tells me a story like this and they seem perfectly well adjusted and calm and serene, that would be a red flag. They tell me these stories and they are agitated and frightened and confused, which seems to be it doesn't seem like it's a form of mental illness. It seems like it's a form of trauma that they've endured. So the military abduction thing is very curious.
It's, you know, it's one of those things where the nuts and bolts, you know, who is trying to mess with whose head sort of line of questioning I always sort of come at some of these things with. I kind of want to think that, you know, this is that maybe not all, certainly not all of the abduction type experiences people have are military or some other, you know, black hat agency sort of operations. But then sort of the rational part of my brain kicks in and I sort of wonder why the military would have to do this. There are federal prisons full of people. There are black sites throughout the world where enemies, real or imagined, are abducted and taken for various reasons, legitimate and not. It seems like the government or government agencies would have almost no shortage of people to do things to if they need to do some sort of strange experiments.
So the implication is that these are UFO abductees. Some researchers call them re-abductions, right? So you have a UFO abductee who's, you know, abducted by the aliens on Monday, and we have to make the assumption that somehow this UFO abductee has been monitored, right? So there's like the black van parked down the street and around the corner monitoring this thing, and these people on the 24-hour watch, you know, like, oh, here comes the UFO, and the UFO, you know, the abduction is taking place. So that takes place on a Wednesday. I have talked to a handful of people who've had these experiences, and one of the things they talk about is they, like, you know, the aliens sort of say, hey, you want to fly the ship? You want to fly it? Come on, here, I'll show you. It's like, sit here. And then it's a completely hands-off, or if it is hands-on, it's basically just hands, palms down on a blank, table almost, or dashboard. And then they, you know, use direct thought to fly the craft. I've read about a bunch of accounts like that, and certainly talked to a handful of people who tell exactly that. Hmm. And then, so these people would then be re-abducted, right? So they're abducted by the aliens on Monday, and sometime Wednesday they send in the boys without any markings on their uniforms. They drug them, they take them off to a spot, and then they interrogate them, and often very, very harsh interrogation. And the question is basically, what do you know about flying the UFO? How does this work?
Huh. Interesting.
So that's That's one avenue of thought, and that story I've read, and I've talked to researchers who have talked to people. Though I have never talked to anyone directly who has had a U.S. government agent in a reabduction scenario, like I just explained, ask about how to fly the craft. I've certainly talked to people who claim to have flown the craft in their contact experience. And then I've certainly talked to researchers who tell of working with people who tell of the re-abduction event at the hands of a government. Now, the implication is that they've got like a crashed flying saucer in perfect shape somewhere in a hangar in Nevada, and they just do not know how to fly it. So they monitor these abductees, and these abductees have these stories like, hey, you know, like I said, you want to fly the craft? I'm sure I'll fly the craft. And they fly it around, and it's just like, just reminds me of like my big brother, you know, like, you want to drive the car? Come on, why don't you drive the car? Really? Yeah. So it's got that kind of aspect to it. So, that is, I mean, whatever, it's a rich, thick, complicated corner of the UFO research, and I summed it up in a way that was probably oversimplified, in a way that doesn't do the real story justice. But that's in a way the thread that is emerging, you know, that kind of thing.
That's interesting. Although, yeah, the you want to fly the saucer, that sounds, I'm not sure, that's weird, but
it's weird, but it shows up all the time.
That's interesting.
That it shows up all the time.
I like that.
And it's all in, people are saying the same thing, and which is curious, because in the Roswell, whatever, the alien autopsy movie, right, there's, you know, not only do they have the funny scene of the six-fingered, you know, person lying on the autopsy table, they also have like a guy in a military uniform kind of standing in limbo there, harshly lit in black and white, holding up these little things that exactly match what Jesse Marcel Jr. claims to have held, which is little teeny, shiny, lightweight, look like aluminum I-beams. But when you zoom in close, they've got, you know, hieroglyphs on them. And they also have, he's holding up like what looks like a part of a tabletop, right? So it's the dashboard. It's this flat little piece of tabletop, and it has the imprint of a six-fingered hand. It's obviously the, like, that's what you put your hands on, right? So the six-fingered alien, he's driving his six, you know, his special souped-up flying saucer. Then that's where he puts his hands to fly the UFO. So that was very curious to me, you know, sort of having immersed myself in that aspect of the weirdness, that the alien autopsy movie had that hands on, palms down on the control board. I'm certain it was faked. I don't think it was a real thing.
Right.
That was, but whoever faked it, you know, had obviously read the same stuff I read.
Yeah. So yeah, it's out there. Yeah.
One of the things that comes to mind is Strieber talking about how he was asleep the one day and someone basically came in and put the implants in. I remember his blog post about it initially before he wrote about it in his, not his latest book with, whatchamacallit, but the one before that, Solving the Communion Enigma. And basically he said these were not extraterrestrials, these were people. They got into my house. They, you know, they put this implant in me. So, and he was absolutely certain this was not the visitors that did this to him. And I wonder if that falls under the same category. I mean, he had, if I remember right, his alarm system was disabled, and it shouldn't have been able to be disabled. And it was disabled by an electromagnetic field that was still there the next day.
And he was lying in bed and heard, this I'm paraphrasing from memory, he was lying in and heard in his mind, as if through a radio in his brain, someone saying, condition red, all clear, something to that effect. As if he was tapping into the walkie-talkies of the secret agents.
I don't remember him saying it was in his head. I know he said he heard that. He heard noise on the gravel outside, too.
Yeah,
like
I'm pretty sure he heard
up.
It in his head. You may be correct, but that's the way I'm remembering it, so...
And so who knows what that, if that's connected to the whole military abduction thing, or if it was, you know, the
visitors. And is it alien technology? I mean, or, you know, like this little teeny thing in his, that they put in his ear.
Yeah.
That and he's had the surgeon on the his Dreamland show, and the surgeon says, you know, like there's a videotape of this. There's nothing to see really because you can't really. But this the audio, where they slice up open his ear, right? Tiny little incision. The ear's not very big, and they have this little thing, and it's this white little blob of something about the size of a cantaloupe seed, and he touches it with the scalpel, and it sort of wiggles away like a fish in shallow water, in deeper into the ear. And then there's a kind of a pause in the audio, and the guy says, "Okay, now we're going to sew this right back up." And and he's had that surgeon on. You know, I mean, I have not gone through the process of fact checking whether it was actual surgeon, but I gotta, you know, trust that that would be the easiest thing in the world to try to fact check. And the guy says, "Yep, strangest thing I've ever seen. Yep, you know, this is what happened. I touched it with a scalpel. It skittered away. I got kind of freaked out and said, operation's over. Give me the suture. We're closing them up." So yes, is that, you know, that was what was put in his ear by those humans. If everything he says, you know, and another problem is this whole issue is just so filled with distorted memories and mixed up timelines. And so, yeah. So what really is going on is difficult to say, but if we take him at his word, you know, we have humans putting something in his ear that, for all intent and purposes, would be alien technologies, seemingly beyond what we have presently.
Yeah. Seemingly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's
All right. Well, let's in a semi-connected sort of theme, let's look at the whole WikiLeaks UFO thing. So WikiLeaks, you know, supposedly released UFO documents and so on and so forth, but it doesn't seem like anything of any real consequence came out of it.
Not out of the UFO stuff that I can tell.
No.
Yeah.
And the there was one thing where Edgar Mitchell was part of a thread that was sent to John Podesta, who was there, you know, smiling with Tom DeLonge and Peter LaVenda, you know, it's my understanding there was a documentary in the production too. There is a documentary in the production as part of the Tom DeLonge Secret Machine, you know, media empire. But where was I? Oh, so the email was sent to John Podesta, and you know what? The problem I had with it. You know what? It looked like one of those sloppy emails that someone just forwards, right? You know, so it's like you kind of get a forwarded email, and you kind of scroll down, like, wait a minute, this wasn't written by him. He's just forwarding this part, and it's like some other letter, and it's like this letter isn't even like he's using like a cut and paste of a letter that. There's a cut and paste, in my opinion, of what is clearly a letter written by Edgar Mitchell, one of the men who walked on the face of the moon. But it's nothing. It's like this. I mean, he has been talking about this stuff for a decade. It was a very succinct kind of, you know, there's every reason we should be looking into these subjects, you know, because now's the time, and you know, we should just end the secrecy and strive forward and I'm doing this all paraphrasing from memory, but there was absolutely nothing at all in that email that he hadn't talked about publicly, Edgar Mitchell. And so it just seemed like a almost like a form letter that, you know, if he wanted to make his case, he would just cut and paste this tidy little four paragraphs. I don't have it in front of me, but so when I saw that thing and I was like, oh, you know, the WikiLeaks email about, you know, that went to the White House. I'm like, oh my God, this is like, this is the stuff that clogs my email inbox. You know, this kind of stuff, there's nothing here.
Yeah. I was just looking at one of, one I sort of half remembered. So I went and found it. Some Podesta emails with some forwards and to the Clinton campaign and things like that back in 2015. Hillary was going to go on the Jimmy Kimmel show. And basically some staffers were saying, look, if you ask her about UFOs, because, you know, everyone's like, it's anticipated he'll ask about UFOs because he asked Bill about UFOs years ago. And one of the staffers thought it would be a fun sort of thing if Hillary said, quote, Jimmy, if you talk about UFOs, people think you're nuts. You have to use the term UAP, unexplained aerial phenomenon. And then this is something the government should study. It was kind of a joke, right? It was something to get laughs to make Hillary look like a UFO dork on a late night sort of comedy talk show. And it's like I think this is at the Open Minds site where I saw this story, or Open Minds or something, one of those sites. And there's like, oh my gosh, you know, reference to Clinton's UFO interests. It's like, yeah, it's a reference, because much like a lot of these things, when it's revealed that so-and-so, like John Podesta, said something about UFOs, you know, shockingly, given the percentage of people who are interested in UFOs and the paranormal, some of them are going to have jobs in politics. And, you know, we're going to find out that they have an interest in this. And, you know, just like any of us would if we had a job there, we'd sort of talk about it. Say, hey, do you know anything? Or let's talk about this, or let's talk about that. It's not evidence of secret chicanery or shenanigans. It's just people are interested in this, and those people are in power, and they're sending emails back and forth, and they're getting emails forwarded to them, like Mike said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing, what's the line? There's no there. You know, there's no smoking gun here.
Now, one thing I will say, and so Edgar Mitchell died last year, and he was very outspoken about his interest in UFOs. So here's a guy who came back. He had a, I think it was called a Samadhi experience. He was coming back from them. He tells it much better than, I mean, there's plenty of, you can just watch UFO, get on YouTube, and he'll tell this story. So Edgar Mitchell, returning from the moon, there's a point when their craft is, they called it in the barbecue, the module that flew home from the moon is rotating slowly because it just heats up too much in the sun without any atmosphere. So it's got to keep rotating, and it's nice and slow. And he's just looking out the window, and his job was to land the craft on the moon. So his job was done on the flight home. So he could just look out the window, and he had this kind of epiphany, kind of realization that there's all is one. And he got back, and he kind of whispered it around and found some researchers and said, you know, like, has anyone else ever had this experience? It was so powerful. And they did a little work, and they realized, yes, this is, you know, referred to in Indian religious forms as a Samadhi experience. And it was this basic all-knowing moment, and he said, well, that fits exactly what I experienced, so that's what I'll call it. And from that point on, he started IONS, which is the Institute of Noetic Sciences, in outside of San Francisco, doing sort of research into the paranormal and consciousness. And but here's this is and I'm going to be very, because I'm talking about someone who was a national hero, and at the same time, you know, would go to UFO conventions. And I talk to a lot of people. So when I go to UFO conventions, I like say, hey, are you an abductee? And you have permission to say that. And some people say, yeah, I am, actually. And then you just start, you know, you have a conversation with them, and that's what I do. And I would talk to these people, and then and on several occasions, I can't tell you quite how many, you know, someone will say, oh, I have these abduction experiences. And, you know who I'm friends with is Edgar Mitchell. He found out, I talked to him, and I, you know, told him my story, and then he started inviting me over. And so, you know, and then I heard that from a handful of folks. So if these folks are to be believed, and they had no reason to make it up, and there's pictures of them with Edgar Mitchell on their, like, on their phone and stuff. And, you know, he's like a retired guy living in Florida. And, you know, so he's having abductees come and visit him and hang out with him and spend the afternoon and have lunch with him. That to me is very interesting. So,
yeah, no, definitely. What was the kid who was in the UK and hacked into the US?
Oh, Gary McKinnon.
McKinnon, yeah.
Now, this is actually something else that where this is, there. This Obama was in office, and oh, what was the prime minister before the present one?
Cameron.
Cameron, yes. So Cameron was, there they were. So Cameron's making a state visit to the United States, and he's at the White House, and they had a little press conference, and it was sort of a, you know, pretty simple staged thing. And it was, you know, oh, we just had this great meeting, and we're looking forward to working together. And, you know, we had a positive thing, and we resolved a lot of issues kind of thing. And then they take some questions from the audience. And one of the questions was, you know, what are you doing with, and no one mentioned the UFO thing. He said, what about the extradition of Gary McKinnon? And they fielded that question. They were obviously briefed on it. They may have even talked about it, and they just fielded it just as smooth as can be, both of them. Just like, well, we've both talked about that, and we talked about it in the thing. And the previous stance has softened somewhat. And that was when they kind of announced that they were no longer seeking extradition of Gary McKinnon to bring him from the UK back to America to stand trial for, you know, what would it be, like espionage or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But there, you know, so here's like Cameron, Obama, the reporter asking a question. The reporter asks a question without mentioning UFOs. These guys answer the question without UFOs, just as smooth can be. And I mean, that was, I mean, so whatever went on, they were briefed. They knew what the question was. You know, they were, if they were expecting the question, they had it well rehearsed. And so just, you know, and that there, that's where McKinnon's claim to have, and it's really interesting because he said he was smoking pot. He's autistic and stayed up late and smoking pot and on his computer. I think the smoking pot thing is correct. I remember that was, and he, hacked into, I think, the Navy to try to find out about free energy, and found a list of ships that had no classification in any way. And then when he looked at the pictures, he was looking at basically like, you know, man-made flying saucers. And it was like the space fleet. And at some point, like, they figured out, like, you know, whoever the spies are in that end, you know, figured out that they were being tapped into, and then click, he got cut off. And shortly thereafter, he was, you know, there was a knock on his door. So he has no proof of anything, doesn't have a screen grab, doesn't have anything, but he wrote about and shared what he had seen, as part of his defense. He wanted it to be public and in the open. That was a decision made to share the stuff publicly in the hopes that it would aid him in not being dragged out of the UK into Guantanamo, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's true, it's interesting. It doesn't prove anything, like a lot of stuff. It's just kind of one of those, well, that's interesting, but what does it really say?
Well, it says that the head of state of the, you know, United States of America and the head of state of the United Kingdom were know all about it and spoke as eloquently as they could, and just gave a smooth answer and just let's move on. So that to me is interesting.
Aaron?
Yeah, that's that's much more about Gary McKinnon than I know. So, yeah, I think I remember the press conference, though. And I was surprised. So I was watching some stream of news or something, and I heard Gary McKinnon. You know, I was like, what? The UFO hacker? Because that's all I really, really knew about. But yeah, it was one of those things that, just sort of looking at it prosaically, just sort of demonstrates that, yes, politicians are briefed about every possible question they might be asked about any possible topic, and they know what to say and what not to say.
Or the reporters are plants in the first place.
Yep.
And why would they? Yeah, I mean, why, you know, I mean, maybe they just got asked that question so it could be dismissed without, so that would, if someone in the back row was going to ask the same question and use the UFO word, right?
They
may, have gotten, like, you know, some guy in the back row is going to say, you know, what about the UFO hacker Gary McKinnon? And then instead it was, they planted the person in the front row who said, you know, what about the, you know, the extradition process for Gary McKinnon?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it definitely did give steam to the breakaway civilization idea. You know, that there's that we have a whole group of people who are using much more advanced technology than are being shared with the rest of the planet, and have spaceships out there and all this other stuff. But it didn't really lend any level of proof to it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was another sort of, yes, that is a good supposition to make, you know, that without having solid stuff behind it.
All right, let's talk about, and I did a couple of shows on this, and I don't know exactly how to term it differently, but I want to say hybrids, but more modern hybrids, people who believe that they are part alien and part human, as opposed to the, you know, Bud Hopkins, where he would say, you know, the aliens are harvesting sperm and ova and stuff to create a hybrid child that is then kept on the ship. There are a number of people who now believe that they are part alien, part human. And I think there's other variations on this that are not alien necessarily, but let's deal with this version of the hybrid belief. And I know, Mike, you've met some of these people.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, Cynthia Crawford, I believe, is in that book. Now, Cynthia Crawford and I interviewed her, and she has a completely outrageous story until you've heard it a handful of times, and then you're sort of forced to pay attention. Now, she claims that, so I think she had this bugs me when I can't do this stuff from memory. I'm just, my brain is so awash in this stuff that I just, it's tough to remember every little detail. So she feels that she was a hybrid, and I asked her, did it take place on a ship? And she said it took place there was a mixing of alien DNA and human DNA. And she says it straight out, and that she is the product of this gene splicing. I will say that she is unusually tall for a woman, unusually muscular. She's probably in her early 60s right now. Big, wide, broad shoulders, and one of the kindest, sweetest, most radiant people I've ever met. She's just got a glorious glow about her, and I literally seek her out when I'm at, she's wonderful to be in the presence of, and I say that with absolute honesty. She claims to channel. She makes these sculptures, and she claims to channel. Some people will channel, the spoken word, or they'll automatic write on a piece of paper. But she claims that her sculptures are channeled. That she makes these little busts of little gray aliens, and she's got names for all of them, and tells you exactly the galaxy they come from. And now, I suspect strongly that if they did a DNA test on her, which is very expensive, and I don't foresee anyone actually going to go ahead and do this, that like Stephen Greer's documentary, she would come out as 100% human. But there's this other side to the, which was the first place I ever read about it was, I believe, in John Mack's book Abduction, where people will, under deep hypnosis, sort of jump back. They're going there for their UFO contact experiences. They'll meet aliens on board a craft, and these memories will be recovered in hypnosis. And they'll say, like, oh, this is my family. I'm back. I'm with my family. I feel this love. I feel this radiance. I feel this familiarity, like, that I've never felt with my own family. And then they'll... John Mack would say, let's go to one level deeper. And then all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, this is a different life. Like, I'm in a different life. And they'll say, I'm an alien. They'll look down at themselves and like, I'm an alien. I'm an alien in a different life. And I am at some meeting where, you're with the little alien council, and they're saying, okay, do you choose, do you volunteer to do the hard work to reincarnate on Earth to play this special role? And the alien says, yes, I do. Now, this is very, very common within, you get a bunch of UFO abductees at the bar. They'll say, I'm my real identity is my real is family is my star family. And this is just, I just reincarnated here to play this role and to do this duty. And they'll just say it as straight can be. And I've heard it so many times that I know when it's coming, and I just don't even bat an eye, and I pay attention and listen. So there's this blurring. Now, when you say hybrid, is it a physical hybrid where they were actually born with spliced genes, or like the same way that we have, hybrid strawberries and kiwis in the grocery store? Some of that can be done through gene splicing. Some of it can be done just be through hybridization through, how the farmer would fertilize the seeds or the flowers. So it's very murky. And I think that within the UFO lore, there's this kind of echo chamber, that within the abductees, there's this kind of echo chamber where you just say it enough times and it sort of becomes truth, right? So you use the term DNA, my DNA has been upgraded. Oh my God, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard that. And maybe some type of upgrade has taken place. People say that, like, oh, I had a visitation and now I feel different. You know, like I have this, and usually it's around a sense of mission, you know, something changes. But they'll say, my DNA has been upgraded. I don't know if that's true. And I understand if that's like a simple metaphor. You know, it's treated as literal truth by a lot of people. And I can take a half step back and say, well, maybe, maybe not. But I understand what you're implying, though it may not be, you know, we may not be able to look at the DNA under a microscope and see that it's upgraded. So this hybridization thing, which Barbara Lam is, yes. She's an easy target because she's a therapist first, and she is not a scientist. And so she's just collecting stories and then sharing the stories that she uncovers, oftentimes through hypnosis. So there's all kinds of problems there. But I believe the people who are telling these accounts are genuine people, and they don't seem to be malicious in their lying. That's a horrible way to put it. They don't seem to be malicious. They don't seem to have any malicious intent in what they're saying. They seem to say it from a point of believing it. So yes, I believe strongly that there could be a more spiritual or more soul-based, let me put it that way, blending of two separate species. Rather than this physical thing. So they and I am might be maybe I'm trying to simplify it in order for myself to believe it. But and then I will say that these people who tell these stories have had very, very unusual life experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sort of hybridization makes more sense to me than the idea that, well, we took an alien sperm and a human egg and we made a hybrid. Because that just, honestly, as weird as it sounds, that seems less likely and less realistic to me than some sort of, if not spiritual or soul-based sort of, you know, reincarnation or, you know, transplanting of experiences, of maybe a cultural hybridization. You know, there's part of your consciousness that was taken away or sent as you're a mental exchange student from the aliens, and your consciousness was put into this human body, and so you have these memories and you have these experiences, but physically you are human. I think in a weird way that makes more sense to me than, you know,
me too.
And it makes more sense to me, and I say that in a way because I don't want to have, you know, these are nice people and I like them, and I don't want them to get the DNA test because I know it's going to come up as probably 100% human. That said, you know, we talked offline about just one of the people that I have met, and she's a radiant person and doing really dedicated work with animals, and it's really, you know, this is a person whose soul and mission on earth is in every way doing something good.
Okay. I think the spiritual level of that, I mean, it might be that they're part something else, that they have no better anchor for in this reality than to say it's alien. You know, and then that just kind of fills in around our current beliefs in the extraterrestrial culture and so on and so forth. And then that's where, you know, that builds out, not so much that they're inventing it, but it's just the way our consciousness parses it.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm certain there's many, many more people than are in that book, you know, that tell of these types of things. And you know, one of the things that, and you know, the implication is that there's also, along with that comes the Indigo Children or the Star Children.
Right. Right.
And you know, that would be, they would be the same thing. They would be somehow genetically enhanced or upgraded. Genetics has a very, very defined meaning in a bio laboratory. It has a very much looser meaning at a UFO conference. So there's, and this is, so here's another thing that shows up a lot. And you talk to a UFO abductee, and these people have these very strange experiences. And, you know, I've heard people say, like, oh my God, this weird thing happened on the night my, you know, child was conceived. You know, they tell, like, out and out, you know, people in the room and abduction and creepy, creepy stuff. And that was the night the child was abducted conceived. The child was conceived on that night. And this child later, you know, graduates high school at 13 and is, you know, beats the chess master and then goes on to, Ivy League school and, you know, majors in physics, you know, and I've heard that story in one form or another many times. What does that mean? You know, where do we go with that?
I had the woman I interviewed on here was Charmaine, who is in the book Meet the Hybrids. And at no point did I get the feeling that she was being deceptive in any way. I mean, it was very hard to swallow the story she was telling. But, like, at no point did she seem crazy. At no point did she seem like she was making it up. It's just I wasn't really sure where to put it in the box of, okay, this is very material reality. This is very symbolic reality. That, you know, it's kind of like I'm not really sure where this lies on that spectrum.
Yeah, that's the problem. You get a credible person telling an incredible story.
Yeah.
You get an incredible story being told by a non-credible person. That's one thing, so.
Right.
But it's, yeah, very, very tough. Very tough.
So let's jump to the other side of the spectrum and look at a couple of things that have happened this last year or so with space and aliens. The first one, of course, is this Tabby star. And this is the one where they're hypothetically saying, well, maybe it's a Dyson sphere around an advanced civilization and such. This was, I want to say this initially came out in 2015. And I'm guessing you guys have heard this, right?
Yeah, I don't know a lot of details beyond, there's a star that went sort of weird. And they're like, well, maybe it's it dimmed or it got.
Dimming over the decades, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was darkening and then it's like, well, maybe it's a alien structure around it, or maybe it's not. Was it Yale? Was the scientist from Yale, Tabby, I'm looking it up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up as well.
Boyajian.
Better than Yale. I could have done with that.
Tabitha Boyajian. Along with citizen scientists from the Planet Hunters crowdsourcing program. So they're seeing the star darken. And so there's, you know, the speculation that it is a Dyson sphere, which is a giant sphere that encompasses the star. And like you live on the inside surface of the sphere. If that sounds weird, go watch the Next Generation episode, Relics with Scotty in it, from season 6 of Star Trek Next Generation. And there's a Dyson sphere in there. So All I know about Dyson spheres, I know from that episode of Star Trek, but, I didn't know it was a real thing. I thought it was a Star Trek thing for a long time, but, it's interesting. And it sort of goes along with, you know, other efforts to sort of figure out how we might detect the alien presence if we aren't being buzzed by flying saucers constantly.
And Joshua Cutchin came up with an interesting question about this. And his thought is, okay, so let's say we can prove there's alien life out in the cosmos somewhere. What does that do to the study of UFOs? Like, do people then just start assuming that that's where UFOs came from? Do the weird part of UFOs just kind of get ignored even more at that point? I mean, what happens to the culture in looking at this idea?
That is a really good question. Because a lot of what ufologists talk about is, well, what would happen to our society, or what would happen to religion, or what would happen to science if we knew this was true? And that's a good way to turn around and say, well, what would happen to you? You know, what would you have left? You know, you have all these theories. And it's like, well, we don't know if your theories are right, but we know this is true because we've got these radio signals. We've found this Dyson sphere. We've found this planet that, you know, is so capable of supporting life. It would be weird if it wasn't supporting life. What would happen to ufology? The sort of gut reaction is it would be sort of, you know, justified and strengthened and reinforced, but I'm not sure if it would be, depending on on what was found and what conclusions were drawn from that. Actually, what would happen is no matter what the conclusions were, ufologists would say that anything that that changes what they think is clearly part of the cover-up, right? So they would keep the narrative going that the scientists are still lying about everything. But more honest ones would have some interesting conversations about where to go.
And toward the end of last year, there was a team of astronomers who were picking up strange signals from a cluster of stars that they believe are actually aliens trying to tell the universe they exist.
Yeah, this was strange. This was strange because, you know, we've been sort of, you know, ufologically growing up with Stan Friedman making fun of SETI, you know, silly effort to investigate and, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, and, you know, I've made fun of it too. It's like in a, you know, much more sophisticated way, of course, by saying, why do we assume that other civilizations would develop technology like radio just because we develop technology like radio?
Right.
It's that sort of, you know, Earth
human-centric,
human-centric, you know, anthropomorphic way of looking at things. But hey, it looks like they might have found something. I can't remember if I read this in a story or I saw it or I just sort of imagined it. But there's some sort of story in my head where we hear these signals or we detect these signals and we trace them back to the source and what it is it's in some way a just sort of bouncing back or reflection of the signals we sent out years ago. So what we're actually picking up is our own signals having been bent back towards us. Which is kind of a letdown, but, yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to see between those radio signals and the dimming stars, Dyson sphere thing. It's exciting because regardless of what this ends up being, it's something from outer space that the scientific authorities might not have been expecting.
I am fairly confident that there is extraterrestrial life out there.
Oh yeah.
I am not confident it's been here. It may have in the distant past, maybe not. And I don't necessarily think the UFO phenomena points to that. It could. But even if it does, I don't think it's in the nuts and bolts way of them flying ships here.
Yeah. And you know what? It's sort of, you know, after talking to so many people with so many interesting ideas about what this phenomenon might be, I would feel kind of let down if it were nuts and bolts spacecraft from another planet. I'd be like, that's it? It's just some people from two neighborhoods over who decided to visit?
Oh, but there's so much more to the mythology. It's like the warring factions between the Arcturians and the Seta Reticulans and the all taking orders from the light beings. And yeah, it's
and then
so
Ashkar
much more
shows
than that.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. But, you know, it's just all these different ideas about multidimensional universes and things like that, that if it was just a flying saucer, it would just be kind of almost prosaic, right?
Yeah. I think Jacques Vallée says something to the same effect. He said he would be disappointed if it's only, you know, visitors from another planet. Yeah. You know, the way I look at it is it's like, you know, like I don't think the Greek gods really lived on Mount Olympus, right? They weren't like up there, you know, on the top of that mountain. There's a rich tradition of these myths and you got to kind of pay attention to them. And then there's a story with them in that. And then there's like metaphors and deeper meanings within these myths. And that's my same sense with the UFO mythology. It's like, well, you know, I don't think that if we took a really powerful telescope and pointed it at the Pleiadian star system, we'd, you know, got a really good close-up of one of the planets, we'd see like these handsome, you know, tall people with blonde hair and perfect physiques walking around, you know. But I do pay attention to the stories that emerge the same way that I paid attention to, you know, the Greek myths when we talked about them in junior high school.
Yeah, it's as scholars have said, it's a modern mythology, and it's got its supernatural figures, and it's got its human prophets, and it's got its cadre of believers, and it's got the skeptics who hammer away at its foundations,
and it's got like evidence, you know, physical evidence, and people telling, you know, compelling accounts of their experiences.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. It's an example of not just mythology, but disorganized religion in a way.
Yeah.
Well, we have one more thing I want to mention briefly, but other than that, we've actually done it. We covered all the subjects that I had down for part 11, which brings us up to pretty much current day, 2017, beginning of 2017. And the last thing I wanted to throw out there was definitely more in the fun category. And there's a TV show that they started last October called People of Earth. And I loved this. I thought it was just absolutely hilarious. And I'm sure there's people who take the UFO thing so seriously that they'll just be offended by it. But I thought it was great.
That's some whisperings. People are like, not cool with this is played for comedy.
Because whoever did it obviously has paid attention to this.
Oh
stuff.
Yeah. There's little things in there that they have a handle on it, and I love it too. I don't think I'm quite up to date on the most recent episodes, but I watched the first six or seven, and it was what I loved about it was. After they get through the first couple episodes of sort of establishing the whole alien abduction support group thing, they don't leave it off to the side because the aliens become characters themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody gets some character development. You start to see some depth and you start to see some relationships. And about halfway through the third episode, I realized, well, this is actually a good show. You know, I like these people and I like these characters and I like what they're doing with them. And I love the guy. I love the guy who just wants to be abducted. He's in the support group, but he's never been abducted. And he just wants to be. And it's like, I think we've all probably met people like that who, you know, they just want to have, they believe in the experience. So, and they feel ripped off that they have so much belief in it, but it's never happened to them. And why are these things being wasted on people who don't appreciate them? Yeah, it's a fun show. I like it, and it's got some real heart to it too.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, what were your thoughts when you only watched the first few, right?
The first couple episodes. It's the only two I've seen, and I kind of was like, you know, I kind of wanted to like it, and it kind of pushed my buttons in the wrong way, but. It's, you know, it's a little bit, I don't know, it was, you know, here's what I want. And in a way, I want to see that same show played deadly serious, played with full drama, you know, with absolute, not a speck of humor in it. I would love to see that, you know, so in essence, the same story, the UFO support group and all the characters and everything they're going through and all the ramifications on how things are changing and morphing and the interactions with the beings and stuff like that. But instead of being played sort of, you know, with kind of, you know, what reminds me of the movie Paul. And I actually liked that movie Paul.
Yeah,
kind of like the TV show, but it was just kind of pushing my buttons and I don't have a cable subscription. So I was just kind of figuring out a way to watch it for free online, which I think I can do now, but, and maybe I'll catch up on it, but I just think the more compelling thing instead of playing it for laughs would be to play it deadly serious. And just to me, that would be exciting. Sure.
But I think if they were, I would wish if they did it deadly serious, they wouldn't do it the same way. Like in this, you're looking.
Oh, not
at,
exactly the same way, but you know what I'm saying.
It's to me, this is almost like a tongue in cheek poke at UFO culture. You know, it's like they take all the cliches and they throw them out there. But at the same time, you have Wyatt Cenac's character who comes in going, "This is nonsense." And then the more he gets involved in it, the more he's going, "Oh God, maybe this is not nonsense."
Yeah.
And then he starts remembering things through his entire life. And yeah, it's couched in that sort of comedy setting, but this is all stuff that has some basis in reality. I mean, where he's suddenly having memories of this lizard, you know, alien when he's a kid, and he's having all these other memories, like, what the hell's happening to my life? And that is kind of what an abductee goes through, even though this is done for comedy.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's not so much poking fun at the experiences or the experiencers, it's poking fun at the attitudes that sort of build around, like you said, the culture itself. And then the individuals themselves are always, you know, despite the humor, you know, usually pretty sympathetic characters that you want to get to the bottom of their stories.
I have been in UFO support groups and had abductee support groups and had someone use the term abduction, and then had literally someone, let's just agree that we're not going to use that term. We're all on agreement, right? Right. And it was like,
and that's an exact scene from that show.
And I don't know how I'm sure that happens in every UFO support group on some way or another. And someone has a really dark experience. And I mean, I've literally, like, shouting matches have occurred in some of these things where, you know, one person has had this beautiful, blissful and angelic experience, and the other person has had the dark trauma nightmare experience. And let me tell you, they're not meeting in the middle ground. You know, it's tense. So so that was very funny, that little first scene where they were like, you know, he called it a UFO abduction group, and they all went, ooh, wait a minute, we do not use that term here. We are experiencers.
So I mean, I liked it. I watched all the episodes. I enjoyed it, and it did get renewed, as far as I know. So.
Oh, good.
Well, then maybe I should follow up on it, because it is something that I took interest in. And so here's the thing. So the Ozzie Graham, right? That's his name.
Who? Oh, that's the character.
The
yes.
The character, yeah. Ozzie Graham. Now you write that on a piece of paper, and right below it, there's a UFO author, historian, researcher focusing on films named Robbie Graham. And a journalist, basically, an investigative journalist. So there's two investigative journalists, one and they almost the same name, you know. So that was something I thought was like, did that happen on accident?
No, I don't think so, because there's so many little hints in there.
Yeah. That
these people know the UFO culture very well. I mean, I don't know who makes it, but there's just too much there to say it was just an accident.
And honestly, you know, to find all that stuff out, you could, you know, you could go on to three blogs and you know, like spend the morning taking notes and get all of that. So,
yeah, but I feel like a lot of TV people don't do that.
Well, they did it on this show. Yeah, I agree that they did it on this show. Yeah,
they would just throw it out. Gray aliens are taking people. Instead, they have the Nordics and the Grays and the lizard people. It's like, oh, they included Nordics. That's interesting.
that sort of struck me too.
There's like this kind of like, you know, sex subplot where, you know, the women are, I mean, I know women who have tell of like deep love for their alien suitors, you know? So,
So I think there's a lot of legitimate reality behind what they're doing and just kind of having fun with it. I don't think it's meant to be insulting to experiencers. I think they're just taking the subject and making it, you know, it's Hogan's Heroes. You know, the Holocaust wasn't funny, but Hogan's Heroes had a way of making it lighthearted and funny and making the Germans look silly.
Yeah.
Well, that's so. I never thought of that. I never made the Hogan's Heroes metaphor, but I've only seen the first couple episodes, and it was, you know, kind of, you could tell that they had the funny synchronicity thing being played out, and someone did their homework. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for this 2-year-long series.
No problem. It's fun.
And we're going to come up with a way to bring you two back together. We had some ideas we were talking over. To do other segments, obviously not UFO history, but things from UFO history.
Yeah.
If anyone out there has any suggestions, or if we missed anything major. The problem is, I know we went through the 80s and we never talked about Rendlesham, and we had to go back and talk about Rendlesham. Because I'll make a list of what we're going to talk about, and some things just slip through. It's not like I can go to a web page that says, tell me every interesting thing that happened in UFO culture in 1980. I'm mostly going through it off the top of my head. And doing a few internet searches and seeing if anything jogs my memory here and there to kind of come up with all this stuff. And there's a few things I just didn't know about. So I'm sure we missed stuff. But, you know, there's 11 episodes out there that are mostly about an hour and a half each. So that's a lot to listen through.
Holy crap. That's 11 times. Yeah. 11 times.
Jeez, 1.5. We could release it as an audiobook.
Yeah, pretty much. But so this has been fantastic. And I'm really glad I brought you two together. I had you both on the month. The first one was in February, but I had you both on in that December previous. And you were both my favorite interviews in a while. And I was just like, oh, these two are going to mix so well. And you did.
Yeah, Michigan. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah,
it must be.
Michigan people.
Because even though you're coming from completely different viewpoints of this, it just, I think that's what makes it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, bald Michigan. We're bald. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, two bald guys who are connected to Michigan. It's how could it not work?
Yeah.
All right. So when people want to find you online and yell at you for things you've said, Aaron, where can they do that?
They can go to Facebook and look for Aaron John Gullius, and my author page will show up, and there I am.
All right, and Mike?
You can Google Mike Cleland Owls, and I'm the first thing that comes up. Or you can go to hiddenexperience.blogspot.com.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, so there you go. That is the end of UFO History with Aaron Gullius and Mike Cleland. We'll come up with other stuff. I promise, because I like talking to those two, and I like the contrast in viewpoints, so they'll be back. All right. We're going to take you out with some Devo Spice. This is nothing but truth.
Beautiful girls all over the world are really from space. Here they're an alien race. Here this is nothing but truth, baby.
Surprise. Regardless of the truth that is right before your eyes, but alien reptiles run the left wing, and the government's covered up every damn thing. And you may laugh at my tinfoil hat, but I can prove to you that the earth is flat. Just take a good look at the moon, man, and you'll see that it's really nothing but a hologram. There's so much nonsense and all these concepts that people just accept as fact, like the existence of kale, Daily Mail. Can't you see this is all an act to prepare us for the pending alien attack? Us to serve on Big Macs and constantly eat a ton of salty snacks. Salty snacks.
Aliens like their food salty.
Robotic squirrels and reptilian girls were already placed here right in front of your face. Here, this is nothing but truth, baby.
Nothing but truth, baby. Nothing but truth.
Nothing but truth,
baby. Nothing but truth, baby. Nothing but truth.
They have been here.
They're here.
Truth. I'm astounded that folks don't uncover stuff. I've been around and I've seen all the cover-ups. I mean, it's not like the government hides it well. Obama's a lizard, you can clearly tell. Now they're breaking down borders, killing reporters, tracking everybody with the chips in their quarters. You are just a pawn in their new world order. Stop. Now think about it.
Spraying London, spraying Paris, spraying chemtrails everywhere. They spray every country except Norway, because Norway was never there.
Never there.
And for that matter, neither is someone from Delaware. See, huh?
All of those food stamps that we all pay for,
we pay for,
are laced with some drugs to sterilize all the poor.
All of
this is nothing but truth, baby.
Nothing but truth, baby.
Poisonous snow,
it's snowing,
that just wouldn't melt.
Not melt.
Was dumped over Georgia and the hole by the bell.
Yep.
This is nothing but truth.
Everywhere I go, I encounter something new.
New.
And I only say this to enlighten all of you.
You.
So let me show you the truth as I host my own panel. On my brand new show on the History Channel.
Beautiful girls all over the world.
Truth. The gates of hell open beneath Denver International Airport. We'll tell you where to go and what restaurants to avoid during your layover. And our special report on Cabbage Patch Dolls. Do they resemble what mutant children will look like after a nuclear holocaust? And are you posting pictures on Facebook for Throwback Thursday? Then you're allowing the NSA to catalog photographs that were taken before Facebook existed. Don't post another picture until you see our special report. Stay tuned to the History Channel, your source for the real truth.